Hello, it's Clive to Carl, another edition of the Health Revolution, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by Janie Lee Grace. And as you might be able to see in her background, she has something called the Sober Club. And while a lot of people have all sorts of addiction problems, I thought it might be very interesting to talk to Janie because she has some rather interesting solutions.
Thank you, Clive. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you inviting me. I mean, I think that what I do is slightly different in that I kind of try and introduce people to this topic before they have a problem, ideally. So the work that I do is very much for the sober and the sober curious. And there are so many people, I think, who haven't yet even considered how much better their life could be without alcohol. So they're kind of the people that I'd love to try and inspire. Because, you know, if anyone's like, you know, the way I was just a few years ago was I thought drinking was perfectly normal. Absolutely everybody does it. But I had no idea that there were other people who felt the same way as I did, waking up at 3 a.m. hating myself for doing seemingly what everyone else does. Because, you know, let's face it, alcohol is the only drug we have to justify not taking. So that's kind of where I'm at with it all, is trying to kind of inspire people who might be thinking, oh my God, could my life be better without it?
I like a glass of wine. Occasionally I like 2 glasses of wine. And I feel that it's not that much isn't doing me any harm. But clearly I can accept that on some levels it is a poison. Do you feel that everybody would feel happier if they were totally sober and didn't drink alcohol at all? Or, you know, what's your view there?
Yeah, well, so I'm absolutely not up for prohibition, not at all. And I think that you know, the work that I do comes under the banner of Imperfectly Natural. That was the title of my first book. So I am imperfect. There is no way I get everything right. I don't suppose anybody does. And I think exactly the same approach goes for alcohol. And that was kind of the line I used for myself for years. So I would say, well, look, you know, I have organic food, I have the right supplements, you know, thank God. Otherwise, God knows what would have happened. You know, I live as healthy as I can. I try not to put too many chemicals in my home or on my skin. I'm imperfectly natural. And it's perfectly fine for me to have a bit of alcohol or whatever my vice is. You know, people have different things that they turn to, don't they, for whatever they want to have to, you know, seek the dopamine. So that's entirely normal. When it's not normal is when it starts to control you, and when you can no longer kind of feel like you're happy without it. So I suppose a better way to answer your question would be, is there such a thing as a mindful drinker, i.e. a moderate drinker? And my answer would be absolutely. It sounds like you are potentially a moderate drinker. So you can have a glass or you can have 2 glasses, and that's not a thing for you. It's absolutely fine. You don't need to join a club. You don't need to have a conversation about it. And I'm guessing if you are a moderate drinker, if you are genuinely a mindful drinker, I'm guessing that if someone you respected, you know, I was going to say a doctor for a minute, but you know what I mean? If a medical professional that you really did respect said to you, actually, you know what, Clive? It would be much better if, in your case, you did not have any more. If that's not the end of the world for you, then you genuinely are a moderate drinker. So, for example, I would consider myself a moderate kiwi fruit eater, right? I can eat a kiwi fruit, I quite like them. You know, it might be that somebody might make a fruit salad and I might have 2. But then I might not think about it for another 2 months. It's really not a thing. I'm not going to join a program or buy a book or have a coaching session, because it's not a thing for me. I don't care really either way. I'm good to go. And the same with, you know, the occasional crappy biscuit or whatever I choose, because I'm imperfect. It might be that I have too much sugar sometimes. You know, it's the way it is. But that's how you would describe someone who is genuinely a mindful drinker, a moderate drinker. It's not a thing for them. But that wasn't the case with me. I got to the point where I was drinking every day. And I would drink 1 glass and then think, that's not really quite enough. And then a voice in my head would say, well, there's some left in the bottle. I mean, it'd be rude not to finish it. And then I would find myself, as I say, waking up at 3 a.m. hating myself. So it took a long time for me to recognize that actually this was becoming an addiction that was starting to control me. Now, I still wasn't at any kind of a level that common knowledge would call addicted. You know, I was what they call high bottomed. You know, I wish that were the case. You know, I didn't need rehab. I didn't need clinical intervention. I was, all in inverted commas, normal, but I wasn't okay. And I really knew that. So I hope that answers kind of that part of the question. But just to go on to the other part of the question, do I genuinely believe that even one glass is harmful? Well, yeah, I do now. With all the research I've done, I actually now know that even one glass is harmful. But we're imperfect, aren't we? So, you know, at the end of the day, everything's a balance. I dare say the chocolate biscuit I had last night is pretty crap too. But that didn't make me wake up at 3 a.m. hating myself.
And how long did it take after you stopped drinking to like yourself? Hopefully you woke up then at some other time in the morning, not 3.
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I think one of the amazing benefits of stopping drinking for those people who are on that kind of spectrum, if you like, because I mean, maybe I should just say that my belief is that there isn't, you know, society would have us believe there are two types of drinkers. There are those who are at rock bottom, who need you know, intervention, they need rehabilitation, they need medication, whatever it might be. And that's a very small percentage, by the way. And then society would have us believe that there's everyone else. And the assumption is that the everyone else is someone like you, who genuinely can have one, maybe have two. Literally fine, absolutely fine. It's not an issue. But that's not the truth. The truth is, it's a spectrum. It's not black or white. We now have this lovely phrase, grey area drinkers. It's somewhere on a spectrum. And the reality is, you don't have to wait till you get to the bottom before you get off that spectrum. The question to ask yourself would not be, you know, how much am I drinking? Is it dangerous? There's only one question, and that is, could my life be better? Do I really believe my life could be better physically and emotionally without alcohol? Now, for you, the answer is no, not really. But for me, it was absolutely hell yes. I absolutely know it could. So once you get off that booze elevator, as it were, I can't deny that the first few days and weeks and potentially months can be really quite hard, because you are stepping into a whole different identity, you know, and it can be quite tough for a little while. I mean, there are things that can help it along. That's why I do the work I do. But it can be a little bit tough. But after a period of time, and it's difficult to say how long, you know, usually, I mean, 3 months is quite a nice marker. A month is too short, although it's a good starting point. But after about 3 months, maybe 6 months, you start to literally become a different person. You become the person you really are. And that's when you can actually start to like yourself again. And this is such a massive thing, because, you know, as you know, what tends to underlie just about everything is that lack of self-acceptance, self-love, self-esteem, whatever words you want to use. And it's really hard to actually like yourself, actually put the self-care in place, when you put in way too much toxic liquid in every day.
So physically, what would one be likely to notice?
Oh God, I mean, how long have you got? I mean, there is nothing that stopping drinking doesn't benefit. That's a terrible double negative. But basically, it makes everything better if it can get better. It certainly doesn't make anything worse. So I've had lots of clients who have found that their long-term chronic problems just disappear. They no longer need medication for all kinds of things, for, you know, all kinds of little stuff that people accept, their digestive health issues, asthma, skin conditions, sleep, obviously, insomnia. One of the really big ones that I find myself dealing with all the time is women who have menopausal symptoms. So I was really shocked when I started doing this work at just how many people, but women particularly, are on antidepressants. I mean, I guess you already know, but I was really surprised. I couldn't believe it. And what women would typically tell me is that they would rock up to a GP with some menopausal symptoms, mood swings, anxiety, poor sleep, maybe hot flushes, maybe a mixture of all of the above. And they would leave after, their 7-minute consultation with a prescription for antidepressants and or HRT, often both. Never asked about their drinking. So these women would come back, and to add to whatever else is going on in their life, they now have antidepressants and HRT and a bottle of wine a night. I mean, how crazy, how absolutely crazy is that? I can't remember the question. Sorry, I went off on one there. What was the question?
It was the physical effects.
Yeah, the physical effects. So basically, pretty much everything improves quite quickly. Obviously, it depends on what's going on for you, but most people find that their skin looks better, their eyes get brighter, there's this lovely expression, sober hair. I mean, who knew, right? Your hair grows and looks nicer. You tend to lose the bloat. I wouldn't say necessarily, in inverted commas, lose weight, because that's something else. That might happen later, because you don't necessarily lose weight initially. But ultimately, you have a much better chance of your weight being regulated when you're no longer piling in a load of liquid you don't need, right? And as I say, all kinds of health conditions improve. I tell you something I was amazed at. My eyesight got a little bit better. I mean, I've got really poor eyesight, unfortunately, but it definitely got better. I literally dropped a diopter, in glasses. Absolutely amazing. All kinds of things get so much better. And women with menopausal symptoms, to go back to that, I know I've had so many clients who feel that they no longer need their HRT. The symptoms just aren't the same. They don't, they're able to totally manage with just a good diet and supplements, because the alcohol was exacerbating everything. Alcohol and the menopause really do not mix. So just so many things improve or get better completely.
Well, very interesting. So, I don't know if there's more you want to talk about on the alcohol side, but when you were kind enough to come to Leicester Square the other day to do a show with us, you spoke some really good sense, I thought, some interesting advice that you were giving from your life and so on. Would you like to possibly go into a little bit of that?
Sure, yeah. Do you want me to share my little positive psychology moment?
Yeah.
Shall I share that with you? Yeah, sure. So just back on the alcohol piece, just to kind of conclude that, because I think it links in. I think one of the I think just to reiterate that the question that I would say people should ask is, could my life be better physically and emotionally without the booze? If a little voice in your head says, actually, I really think it could. I think I am just getting into a habit of drinking every day and or whatever it might be, or I'm binge drinking, or I'm drinking because I'm a people pleaser. Then you absolutely owe it to yourself, because this is the most important thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. If you're drinking too much, by taking that first step, it's just incredible how it lays the foundations for absolutely everything else. So that's the work I absolutely love doing. That's what I do in the Sober Club, is try and encourage people and support people to just lay those foundations from whatever stage you're at. We've got members in the club who are day one and they're kind of just thinking about it and they're really nervous. And people have been sober for 10 years because they're focusing on the what's next in the personal growth, so that leads me on to the little piece that I shared on the day in London. And that's really this kind of idea that we all it's really important, I think, for us all to focus on what it is we want. And interestingly, when you ditch the booze, that can kind of bring that into focus, and you get a little bit more clarity on what it is you might want for yourself for the future? I mean, most of us, we're often on a bit of a hamster wheel. We just get on with it every day, don't we? And we just, hang on to the minutiae of life. And I've done several events for people within the sober club, and I'll have pe perhaps a group of women in the room, and I'll ask them, what do you want? And the answer will usually be, oh, I want my mum to get better, or I want, my son to get into a certain school, or I want, and that wasn't the question. It's what do you want for you was the question. But that almost feels too difficult to answer, because most of us haven't stopped to really think about what we want for ourselves. We've just been so caught up in everyday life. And we know, don't we, that what we focus on, we get more of. That lovely expression that I can't remember what it is, but the one I mean, where energy focus goes, energy flows, or something like that. It's what you focus on, that is what you get more of. You attract more into your life of where you put your thoughts and your focus. And so the little kind of philosophical moment that I shared on that event was this kind of lovely concept of, if you think of your life as across a week, so 7 days. Now, in the old days, we used to say that if we were lucky, we'd have 3 score years and 10, i.e., we'd get to 70. Well, please God, we get to a lot more than that. But let's just take that as a framework, because everything else is going to be a major blessing. So let's take that as a framework, and you imagine every day. So we start at Sunday, and that's 0 to 10, and then obviously Tuesday is, whatever, Monday. So most people watching this video, I'm guessing, are probably at least on Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Some people, Saturday and Sunday, as I said at the event, no offense, but quite a lot of us are past it, right? So it's really interesting, and it really focuses the mind when we say to ourselves, right, so hold on, I'm on the Friday afternoon of my life, or I'm on Saturday. What the hell? I'm on Saturday, right? This is how much time I have left. So what is it that I've been wanting to do? And when you say things like that, people go, oh God. And some people say, right, I'm going to write that book. I've been thinking about it for absolutely ages, and I'm goddamn well going to write it now. Sometimes someone will say, I really want to travel. One of my sober club members saved enough money, not drinking, to buy a camper van and went traveling, So all kinds of amazing things can happen when you make that decision that, okay, I'm on Friday or Saturday or even Sunday morning. What is it that I've always wanted to do? But the other piece that I shared was that sometimes when you share this stuff about this, what's my goal? What is it I really want? What do I want to do with my life? I've known people who will get all depressed at that, and they'll go, oh, I can't actually think of anything. I've never really wanted to own a business or write a book, or maybe I'm just really boring. And then the next question to them would be, well, how do you want to feel? And a very wise spiritual guru once told me, a purpose, finding your purpose, it doesn't have to be that it's some massive job or career or fame or fortune. Maybe your purpose is just to be happy. And how amazing would that be if that was really your purpose, and you really took that on board, and that was what you focused on, depending on what happiness meant to you, of course. Because that way, imagine the ripple effect that that would have. So there's my little 2 minutes of psychology.
Oh, very good. What I found over the years, because I 20 years ago, I used to see quite a lot of clients who wanted to give up whatever it was, from smoking to cheese or whatever it happened to be. And I'd always ask them that very question. Look, if you're going to have a lot more money now because you're not doing what you're doing, but there must be something you've always wanted. And I used to use examples like, well, maybe you always wanted to buy a nice guitar, or maybe you want to buy a set of paints and do that painting you've always wanted to do. That, because if you can you know, that chattering brain which says, go on, you know you want it. If you can say, well, actually, I think it's a fair trade because I'm going to get the new guitar or whatever it is, it helps, in at least in my mind, to sort of justify that sort of thing. The other thing that I was again recommended is people absolutely go for full nutrition if they're trying to stop something. And then there are the supplements, you know, so
Well, absolutely, I mean, that's stage one of the kind of course that I offer is recommending to people that for a minimum of at least sort of 6 to 8 weeks, even if they don't do it beyond, they have to focus on really, really good nutrition, and they have to be quite specific on that. And I remember years ago I interviewed a fantastic author who'd written a book called The Mood Cure, and she'd actually worked in rehab centers in the States, and they'd looked in detail at why certain people rocked back up after a month or whatever. I mean, all things being equal, you know, obviously if they were homeless, that might be different. But if they, all things being equal, why did they come back? Why did they relapse? You know, hate that word, but you know what I mean. Why did they relapse? And they found, it was absolutely fascinating. They found that apparently no study had been done before, which is incredible. But they found that it was those people who weren't getting adequate nutrition. In fact, she even said at the time, she said that a large percentage were vegans. And I remember saying, oh my God, you know, my listeners who are vegans are not going to like that very much. And her answer was, but this isn't about choice. It's a medicinal diet. I thought, wow, that's really powerful. It just so happens that the medicinal diet is just real food. Like proper food, you know, eat regularly, eat proper food, have some protein with every meal, have really good fats, and don't eat crap. You know, it's just real food. It's common sense, but for many people, they've got so far away from that that they really need to be reminded.
Well, you're absolutely right. And there is the book.
That's the book, The Mood Cure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How did you magic that out of thin air?
Amazing, isn't it? So, tell us about the Sober Club and, you know, the benefits.
Sure, So this is my book, Happy, Healthy, Sober. And that has a whole bunch of, well, a challenge in there, if you like, but also loads of lifestyle advice and some fantastic experts in there. I've got some amazing contributors to that book. And then the Sober Club, it's an online community. So there's a small monthly fee, and that includes a course, a full course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. A massive member portal full of videos and content around every aspect, actually. So you've got everything to do with nutrition, to do with kind of the emotional well-being. So we've got meditations in there. We've got a fantastic session with a shamanic healer on movement medicine, because sometimes, you know, you want to get out of your head, but in a healthy way. So you literally just need to drop into the body. We've got videos on creativity, on purpose, and just about everything in the member portal. And then we have a private group where people can get completely non-judgmental support, you know, 24/7, really. There's always someone around, and we become cheerleaders for each other. I think that's the really powerful piece. You know, when you, one of the pieces that is often missing when people decide to quit is they decide to do it on their own. They choose to do it on their own. They don't tell anyone. And then they do it on their own, and they're fine for maybe a couple of weeks or something. And then the little voice comes in the head, the wine witch appears and goes, oh, you know, well, you're obviously not an alcoholic. You're okay now, so you can just have one. And then it all kicks in again, and they're even further down the booze elevator. So by being connected with like-minded people, it makes such a massive difference, so that they can just get that support when they need it, you know. And it's completely non-judgmental, and somebody might write a message saying, I don't know, it's my daughter's wedding, and you know, I mean, I'm really thinking about that champagne because they're all going to be chinking champagne. I'm not really sure what to do. Maybe I should just have one. And then the messages that come back will just be so supportive, and people will just say, well, you know what? God, I wish I had been able to go to my daughter's wedding sober, you know. Or you'll have a fantastic time, order something alcohol free, and you just get this kind of sense that there are people rooting for you, and that makes a huge difference.
Well, absolutely. And for every health issue, it seems, I mean, With cancer, I've read lots of reports about the people who do it by themselves and the people who do it with a support group.
Yeah.
And clearly a support group, it may not help for everybody, but clearly for a lot of people it is a big thing.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, so I mean we're meant to be connected, aren't we? We're meant
Oh, absolutely. No, we have a whole
to.
family,
Yeah, exactly.
My grandfather was one of 11,
Wow,
We had quite a
really?
lot of support at that point.
Yeah, totally. Interestingly enough, that's the, I won't get into it now, but that's the other work that I do now is called Family Constellations. And there's some really interesting stuff that happens in Family Constellations workshops when you look at big families and how stuff is passed down, with intergenerational trauma. Oh, there's some interesting stuff there, but that we'll save that for another time.
Family Constellations, Bert Hellinger.
That's all right. That's the guy.
Incredible. I mean,
Yeah.
we should do another program on that because it's hard to think of another word apart from magical.
It really is. I'm doing another workshop in a few weeks, and every time we do them, it's literally life changing. It's literally life changing. One, what you can do in a kind of a, I don't know, 30-minute kind of constellation is so powerful. I mean, that really should be on the goddamn NHS for everybody. Imagine how everyone's life would be different if they had a session of that.
So now we've tempted them.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, have you got the time to do it now?
Yes, I guess. I mean, unless you want to keep it separate, I can do. But yeah, it's up to you. I'm happy to talk about it now.
Yeah,
All
let's
right.
because it's so interesting. I mean, I'll let you describe it.
Yes, that's the difficult bit. If you'd given me some warning, I might have kind of found a slightly snappier way to say it. But as you say, Family Constellations was devised by Bert Hellinger, a psychotherapist. It's I don't I'm not actually sure Family Constellations is the right name for it, really. Clearly, the name he chose, but that makes you think it's some kind of family therapy where you're going to bring your family in. It isn't about that. It's about what's the other phrase is systemic constellations. So it's about looking at the family system. So normally this would be done in a workshop setting, and you would have one person who is an issue holder. We sometimes call them tissue holders because you nearly always end up crying. You'd have an issue holder and they would bring an issue. So that would just be something going on in their life or something they want. So it can be as diverse as I can't seem to find a partner, or I don't feel I'm a very good mother. That was mine some years ago. Or it might be, I don't know whether to change career. It can literally be anything. It's what's your heart's desire, really. It's what's going on for you is what the issue holder will bring. And then the practitioner will guide them to share just a little bit of information about their family of origin. Now, this is where typically we'd get into stories, like, oh, my dad was total, he was just, this and that. Well, that doesn't matter. We want the facts. So this is where we get the facts from the individual about their family of origin. So it's what were the important things that happened? Did someone go to prison? Did someone die young? Was there rape in the family? Was there, the stuff we know about, the big things. Death and mental illness and all of the big things, the things that would typically be called trauma, we need to know about those things without the stories attached, just what exactly what happened, what are the facts. And then as the practitioner would kind of decide, okay, well, which elements shall we look at? Let's look at the let's set up a constellation perhaps with your mother. And your brother, or your mother and your father and your grandparents, whatever. It would depend on what the story is. And then they would select, or they would ask people within the workshop if they will represent that person. Or they might be representing a country, or we've even had people representing alcohol, right? It doesn't matter. It's so difficult to describe this because it sounds as though what I'm discussing is some kind of a dramatic role play, psychodrama, and it absolutely isn't that. We ask someone to represent this energy, and then we literally ask them to stand in what we call the field, which is just the space in front of us, and they drop into the energy of what that person or that place or that thing might have carried. And that's where it becomes magic, because I can't explain to you how it works, but it absolutely does. The very first time I was a representative myself at a constellation session, I was sitting there listening to all this going on, and the woman who did it, her issue was around being frightened of dying, because her mother had died young, and she was terrified of dying. She was getting to the same age that her mother was when she died. So this woman's issue was she was terrified of dying, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, I really hope they don't ask me to go do it, because seriously, I went to drama school. I ain't doing this shit for free. That was kind of what was going on in my head. And of course they came, asked me to represent death. So I'm thinking, well, that's charming. So we kind of have all this personal stuff going on. But once I stood in the field, as we call it, once I stood in that energy, and the practitioner said, forget all your own stuff, it's not about you, just drop into the energy of what it is or who it is you're representing and see if you feel anything or nothing. And that literally is what you do. You just become that flag in the wind, as it were, to just show the practitioner what might be happening. And it's absolutely magical what transpires, because when we get to see the energy of our family of origin or our ancestors, so much information is carried in those, in that cellular memory. It's just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I remember reading Bert's book and being absolutely blown away by what was happening in these constellations. And why use the word like you did, magical? It, it's beyond explanation as to why it keeps working.
It is beyond explanation, but also, by the other token, we have to remember, we are all connected. And we do know about epigenetics. We absolutely do. Don't we? I mean, that is absolutely scientifically proven. How we get that information transmitted to us in that moment, I really don't know, but I absolutely know it's for real. I've had people in Constellations workshops who are very skeptical that this that they're that this is going to show anything, and they're literally blown away. They're just wide-eyed. I mean, we had one constellation where someone was they were talking about their, I forget the issue, but anyways, a guy was asked to represent this woman's grandfather or great-grandfather, and he stood in the field, and the practitioner said, what's going on with you? How do you feel? Are you hot? Are you cold? Are you whatever? Just to see if there was any information. He was completely skeptical about all of it, but he just sort of said, well, no, I don't feel any of that, but my leg's giving way. I think I might need to sit down. And he was completely able-bodied, and the practitioner said, well, are you okay? Can you hold it for a little while? And he said, well, I don't know. My leg is completely collapsing. And the practitioner looked to the issue holder, who just looked absolutely shocked, and then she said, I didn't tell you. He lost his leg in the war. Well, you have to be kidding me. And that's the kind of thing that happens all the time.
Yeah, incredible. So somebody wants to go on one of your courses. I mean, not only are they going to learn a lot, hopefully, about themselves, but they'll learn a lot about the way the
Yeah,
system works.
totally. I mean, the way we run, I work with a fantastic trauma therapist, and we facilitate together. And the way we do it is we don't pre-book issue holders. So everyone who comes along has the opportunity to participate by being a representative. Most people find they do want to participate. It's a fantastic way of being kind of in service to other people. And actually, you get a huge amount from participating. Almost always, if you're asked to participate, you will learn something, you will gather something for yourself. It's really powerful. And then we will just literally depend on the energy as to who does an issue. So we tend to run it like that rather than pre-booking the issue holders, as it were. So if you just go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, then in the menu, then you'll see all the info of our next workshop. So I don't know when you're running this, but we've got one in April and we do them fairly regularly. We can do them online. Amazingly, they do actually work online as well. I was a little bit incredulous, but they do. But if you can come to a workshop, obviously you get the connection piece as well.
I used to do hypnosis over Skype at one point. I called it Skypenosis. My only that I get them in some really sort of deep meditative state. And then the line was cut.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Janie.
It was great to chat to you.
Always lovely to speak to you.
And thank you for all your amazing work. I mean, honestly, I can't believe I didn't find you sooner. I just can't believe it. When I think I've been doing all this kind of stuff for so many years. But anyways, it's all complete now because I can now recommend your amazing stuff to everyone.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much.